Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. I mean, like covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. Y'all, I'm talking about this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. So this first section we're doing, we're going to be cooking up a batch of you know, the thing. We put it all together. We got the stories from around the areas where we live, but it's a whole batch of what we like to call home fries. Yeah. Sizzling. Cooking them up. Smell them from here. All right. So I do this because I do this as much for me as anybody else. So the reality is, and I say it all the time, but I cannot emphasize enough, that in my opinion, there are times when what comes out of our own backyard or out of our state capital actually has more impact on our daily lives than anything that comes out of D.C. or anything that comes out of some, you know, faraway place where a thing is happening. I'm just saying, foreign policy and national policy, those are important, absolutely. You got to stay alert and stay alive. But sometimes the things that really matter and the things that are important for us to know and involve people that we might actually see in our backyard or places that we're used to going. So, I mean, I've got a number of things happening here, not the least of which is, so one of our congressmen, and Gary Palmer has been on the show several times, but Congressman Gary Palmer, story here in Yellowhammer News, came out over the weekend. Right now it's being said that Congressman Palmer is considered to be a very influential member of Trump's energy policy plans for the next administration. Now, what does that mean? So first of all, if you don't know, Gary Palmer, before he was ever at the, before he's ever in Congress, he's the one who started the Alabama Policy Institute, where I used to be on staff and, you know, where you hear Stephanie Smith come on the show all the time. But the Alabama Policy Institute's been around for over 30 years, I think 35 years now. So 3.5 decades of doing conservative policy and policy advocacy and working on conservative issues in the state and fighting against liberal issues in the state, and he took that with him to D.C. Congressman Palmer has become known as a sort of a policy master in the D.C. arena. You're Alabama congressman who represents a huge swath of this listening area. He's from right down here in the Hoover area. And right now what we're hearing is, as Trump begins to form his, you know, next round of policy positions for taking office, he's leaning on Congressman Palmer, apparently, for energy. That's a story from the Wall Street Journal, by the way. So it says, Alabama Congressman Gary Palmer was identified as an influential figure in former President Donald Trump's policy circle in a deep dive report from the Wall Street Journal. According to their coverage, Representative Palmer is playing a key role in a policy area expected to be a top priority for Trump as he lays the groundwork for a potential second term. The policy issue is energy. Wall Street Journal said, quote, Trump's campaign has developed a relationship with Representative Gary Palmer, chairman of the Republican Policy Committee, and has been discussing energy matters. By the way, in case you didn't know it, that's the other thing. Your Alabama Congressman Gary Palmer is like fifth in line in terms of overall leadership in the House. You have the Speaker of the House, you have the Speaker pro tem, you have the, I guess it's the majority leader now, and then actually it may be him, maybe fourth, I may be missing one. But that being said, it's extremely interesting. Now, here's the thing, and there's something else that came out of this. Well, I'll tell you what, let me finish this piece first about Palmer. Cliff Sims, it says, and Cliff Sims has been on the show too. Cliff Sims is the one who founded Yellowhammer News years ago. He went on to work for Trump. Cliff Sims, who served as former director of national intelligence, Ratcliffe's deputy director and special assistant to Trump himself, said it's no surprise that Trump has gravitated toward Representative Palmer's expertise. He said plenty of members of Congress came to the White House for photo ops, but Gary would quietly come in without fanfare to talk policy and try to get as many conservative wins as possible. He never cared who got the credit. And that's so interesting because when I was in the state Senate, when I first met Gary Palmer, that's what the first time I met him, I walked into my office, and we had an office suite. There'd be four senators who had little side offices off the main room. And I walked in, and I heard voices, and I kind of stepped over to my buddy's office. It was Senator Paul Bussman from Coleman. And there's Gary Palmer just sitting there hanging out. And they're just talking. They're talking policy. What are you going to do about this bill? And how do you feel about that? And Gary, what would you think? And I sat there for probably half an hour and just chatted with him. And it was exactly what I just heard characterized. He just kind of quietly would come in. He'd say, here's some things to think about. Here's why we care. And then, you know, that's just great. Hey, I got to tell you, though, there's one nugget in this article. So, you know, I've said multiple times, it is abundantly clear that Biden has never led anything in his life. He has never run a business. He has never led troops. He has never had to cut a paycheck or balance a budget. He has never had to do anything except have what I call the luxury of rhetoric without responsibility. He could make a speech and then walk away from the podium and nobody had to own it. He just say whatever he wanted to say and step off. And now he's in charge. Unlike Trump. So here's this piece in that article about Gary Palmer. I bring this out for your digestion here. It says, Trump's policy development, like much of what he has brought to government, is unorthodox. A mix of his gut instincts and his working style, he eschews traditional meetings and flowcharts, aides say. Instead, he draws on his experiences in business and direct conversations with an extended network of contacts and longtime friends, CEOs, and people he has met. That's exactly what you want. I mean, if they're saying that's a problem, I got news. That's what you want.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, who would think that you would want to try and do that as the leader of the free world?
Yeah, I mean, goodness gracious. The very idea you could have life experience might help you run the country. God forbid. That's awesome. Okay, we had a thing happen, and I've got somebody that I believe is going to come on the show tomorrow. Representative Philip Insler is a Democrat from Montgomery, and party lines make no difference to me in this particular story. So Representative Insler is the only member of the Alabama legislature who's Jewish, and his congregation had a bomb threat this past weekend. So here's a story that came out, first of all, on the national scene. It came out this morning. Got this one off Fox. A suspect has been arrested in Washington, D.C. after allegedly spraying unknown substances at two people while making anti-Semitic remarks in the vicinity of a synagogue. A guy named Brent Wood, who's from Toledo, Ohio, had apparently gone to D.C. He's now facing charges of assault and resisting arrest. But what we're seeing is what the press is calling a rise in anti-Semitic behavior. And I don't know if it is a rise or if it's just always been there and now they're reporting on it. Either way, it's bad. But then take that national trend and bring it all the way here home. Story here from WBRC. And also on WSFA 12 News out of Montgomery. Six of the seven Jewish entities in Central Alabama received an email bomb threat Saturday morning, according to an email from the Jewish Federation of Central Alabama. And I won't read all their names because I would probably mangle them, but you had Jewish temples in Dothan, Selma, three in Montgomery, and one in Auburn, all received the email saying that there was a bomb in their synagogue. The only one that didn't was one other one in Auburn. Each congregation, it says, that received a threat has contacted local authorities. So far, Auburn, Montgomery, and Selma have been cleared of any danger by canine police dogs. So one of those synagogues in Montgomery is where Representative Philip Insler goes. He and I made contact yesterday, and I hope to have him on the show tomorrow. But he's also, by the way, the director. What's his name? The Jewish Federation. That's him. I think he's the director of the Jewish Federation of Central Alabama. But he says this morning, this past weekend, during Shabbat religious services, the Jewish day of rest, we had to evacuate my synagogue in Montgomery due to a bomb threat. He posted a video when the service was stopped in the forced evacuation. And in the tweet that he put out, he said, this is exhausting, and I pray for the day that we can worship and live in peace. U.S. Senator Katie Britt expressed outrage over the threats. These threats against Jewish congregations here in Alabama are absolutely reprehensible. This type of anti-Semitic behavior has no place in our state or nation. We proudly stand with our Jewish brothers and sisters across Alabama and America. So that's your backyard, y'all. That happened right here. So when you see things like, you know, what's going on in New York City, or what happened in Washington, D.C., what's going on in Chicago? Well, there's I believe only 7 Central Alabama Jewish temples in the whole in that part of the state. 6 of them got a bomb threat this past weekend. That cannot happen. Now, I will say this. 1819 News ran another story that came out over the weekend, and they're saying that this appears, and obviously it was, but they're saying this appears to be a nationwide hoax, that it was part of a broader scheme to just try and impact Jewish religious services. And I'm not Jewish, obviously. I mean, I'm guessing we're still in Hanukkah. Are we still in Hanukkah right now?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but still, I just look at what you got.
Well, so if it's multiple states, I'm sure the feds are jumping right on the cybersecurity. Yeah, the FBI trying to figure out where this email's coming from.
I would hope so. I mean, assuming they're not too busy, like, you know, I don't know, chasing grandma who actually dared to pray outside of an abortion clinic or something. But yeah, I would think so. Being multi-state is going to wind up being a federal issue. And I'm sure that the state officials are cooperating and trying to collaboratively work on the issue. All right, Butters, take me to a break, brother. We'll do that right now. I'll come right back and tell you what appears to be a good guy with a gun stopped a bad guy right here in Birmingham. 183 homicides, though, this year. 183. We'll see. And then, oh, by the way, if you got a Glock switch, you know what a Glock switch is? If you got a Glock switch, the ATF is going to come knocking on your door. Right here in Alabama, they're making it very clear. That and more, we're doing home fries. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, wow, making common sense like a superpower. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to have State Senator Sam Gavan on. As we're doing home fries, we get a few things from him, updates on some stuff happening in Montgomery or about to happen in Montgomery. And, yeah, that's coming up top of the hour. So this story, AL.com.
Now it's, can I interrupt you real quick?
Oh yeah,
we had a caller call in over the break.
Yeah.
It ended.
It.
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Ended Friday.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So I did not fact check the caller.
Who called? You know?
He didn't give his name.
Okay. Anyway.
He said he enjoyed the show. So thanks for calling in.
Thank you, anonymous caller.
Sorry. I should have asked your name. I didn't mean to forego the pleasantries.
We can't do a thing with you.
I'm sorry.
No, it's good. I appreciate that. Thanks for the heads up. So here's this next story. This came from AL.com. So I'd say not take the facts per se with a grain of salt, but perhaps the slant of the facts. So here's the storyline. This happened over the weekend. It says the weekend violence in Birmingham area continued earlier this morning. This is on Sunday, when someone was shot to death outside of an East Jefferson County Waffle House. Jefferson County Sheriff said deputies were dispatched at 1:30 a.m. to the restaurant in the 2200 block of Center Point Parkway. The report was that a person was threatening to shoot patrons. So there was somebody there who, we don't know the storyline. All we know is there was someone there who allegedly was, you know, threatening to shoot patrons. Before deputies got on the scene, Sheriff's department says the 26-year-old man, that's apparently the gunman, got into an altercation with one of the patrons there in the Waffle House, and the patron then shot the man and left. The 26-year-old was pronounced dead on the scene. So let me say what's not being said in that story, because as I read between the lines and glean a few bits and pieces and put it together, it sounds to me like he got one of those classic cases of some nut job. It walks into a Waffle House waving a gun, threatening to shoot people. It doesn't say whether he was threatening to hold the place up or not. All we know is it says a person was threatening to shoot patrons. That person who was threatening to shoot patrons got into an altercation with one of the patrons, and said patron then shot the man and left. Don't know any more details. All I know is the left hates it when a good guy shoots a bad guy. That's just they hate it. What you got?
I'm curious what leads someone down the road of thinking that starting anything at a Waffle House is a good idea. Like, I mean, that can only end poorly.
Don't get in the way of somebody having their scattered and smothered.
I mean, yeah.
Just,
I'm surprised one of the cooks didn't just, you know, take care of them with a spatula or something and get right back to cooking. I mean, come on.
Well, all I know is, old boy's dead. And they don't want to tell you the rest of the story. Like, there was a shot with his own weapon. But by the way, the police don't know who the shooter was now because he left. And he probably left because he, I don't know, didn't want to get all jammed up with all this stuff. But the reality is they're going to find out who he is eventually. And he ought to probably turn himself in and save himself the trouble of looking like he's trying to be elusive. But nonetheless, yeah, I'm thinking that what we're looking at here is a good guy got involved when a bad guy was threatening everybody else, and ain't nobody on the scene knows nothing. No, we don't know nothing. Bad guy's dead. That's all we know. By the way, that's the 183rd killing in Jefferson County just to this year alone. All right, are you familiar with Glock switches?
I will admit I had to look them up. So. Okay.
Glock switches. For those of y'all out there that don't know, if you got a Glock is a hammerless version. I mean, external hammer. It's got a hammering mechanism, but it has an internal hammering mechanism. But there is a thing you can put on the back side of it that forces it to re-engage the firing mechanism. Like as you fire, it prevents it from going into single shot and just chambering around and sitting and waiting. It forces the next round to be shot, and it basically turns your semi-automatic Glock pistol into an automatic.
Kind of like a bump stock,
it's like a bump stock, but crazy. And I've watched videos of it. It's amazing. And
it sounds like a really expensive way to go through a lot of rounds.
Yes, but
I mean, fun.
It sounds like a pretty cool way to go, but apparently they are highly illegal. Didn't the ruling get changed? Bump stocks are back in now. You can have a bump stock.
I can't keep up with that stuff.
Anyway, I know.
I'm sure somebody's listening.
Hang on a second.
Tell us.
Bump stocks versus no, you can't. It's arm braces that are back. Arm braces are back, not bump stocks. But nonetheless, WHNT reports that in Montgomery, local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies say they are working to crack down on gun violence by going after machine gun conversion devices. So, I don't know why this equates to we're cracking down on gun violence by stopping you from having a Glock switch, although it's illegal, so okay. It says officials say they make guns more dangerous. I don't know that that's true. They should shoot more rounds. There's that. You can also buy an extended magazine and just pull the trigger real fast. Glocks don't have a lot of trigger pull. I mean, they've got
My Glocks will shoot pretty fast.
Yeah. During a press conference at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Montgomery, federal law enforcement officials announced the indictment of 11 people in Montgomery for possessing Glock switches. He says these things are often advertised as accessories online, said Special Agent in Charge of ATF's National Field Office Agent Leitner. Ashley Leitner said they're advertised as things like keychains and necklaces. This piece right here is illegal. It takes maybe 15 minutes to print one out on a 3D printer. And it converts your semi-automatic pistol to an automatic. So what I'm saying is this, folks, bottom line is this. Automatic weapons are controlled by the National Firearms Act, unfortunately. And they've decided that Glock switches suddenly converts your semi-automatic, perfectly legal to have 9mm or whatever it is pistol into some kind of death-defying killing machine. But it ain't worth going to jail. It ain't worth having a felony on your record. And it ain't, you just go practice your magazine changes and buy an extended round magazine if you want one. There's ways to do things. It's unreal. Glock switch. If I hadn't seen this article, I'd have thought that was the coolest sounding thing to have. Got me a Glock switch. Oh, why are those flashing lights outside my door? All right, coming up next, State Senator Sam Gavan calling in. We'll get some stuff with him, and I got some text messages starting to pile in, so we'll catch up on those too. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios for hour number two. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. And we're going to go right to the phones right now. State Senator Sam Gavan has served now in the capacity of state senator for District 7 up in the Huntsville-Madison County area since 2018. He is a leader among his peers in the Senate, a practicing attorney in Madison County, and he's on the line right now. Senator Gavan, how you doing?
I'm doing super. How are you today, Phil?
I'm good. About ready for Christmas?
Oh, no. I
brought
the first present.
Bro, they got...
I'm sort of a Christmas Eve shopper.
They got this thing called ordering online. It comes to you. It's awesome.
Yeah, I got to touch it. I got to go to the store and do all that fun stuff.
Well, good luck, brother. Just saying.
Hey, it's worked for this long.
Well, yeah, that's true. Hey, listen, I got to ask you. So this is going to be a refresh of a story you and I talked about some time back. But you've been on point, and the Alabama Policy Institute, where I used to be, has also been dealing with this issue. We have the weirdest situation in Alabama with our state health officer who, good Lord, we found out how much power he has during the pandemic, has no accountability. He's not subject to confirmation by the Senate. He's not somebody who can, be recalled, none of it. He's not accountable to his constituents. He's appointed by the medical community. And you've got a bill to help change some of that. Tell us what's happening, and do you have the co-sponsorship you need for this year?
Well, yeah, I was, first of all, talk about the issue about the, I think a lot of people just don't know that. I know I was shocked to find out that the limited or almost no control that the government really has over him. And it's not a government grab. It's accountability to the people, right?
Yeah.
We've got it's not just all doctors. It's a limited group of doctors. Less than apparently half of the doctors in Alabama belong to this group. And look, I support this group in a lot of things they do. It's not like they're not my friends. I just disagree with them on this issue. And it's not, to me, about relitigating COVID. And that's what it's been with, the one of the Democrats that was willing to get up there and fight me on it. I think he really perceived it more of, we're going to argue about COVID, and the Democrats are supposed to be for masks. And, wearing masks when you're walking down the street with nobody near you, 90-degree heat, you're supposed to wear a mask. And I just, I see so many bless their heart moments like that. But it's like, that's what they do. And, Republicans don't wear masks largely unless you got a health reason, and that's not what it's about. Okay. It's about that we have a significant division of our state government that has no accountability to the people.
Right.
The people can reach out, and as my dad would say, jerk a knot in our head, by talking to us and ultimately, if they don't like what we do, bouncing us out of office, there is nothing the people can do about the state health officer. And so, what we've done is I've come back, and I've gotten a lot of co-sponsors. I still need some more. I either was misquoted or I just was not thinking. Obviously, I can count. I count to 35. I'm not going to get 35 co-sponsors or sponsoring co-sponsors, but. I just couldn't remember because I hadn't looked at it. I got a lot of signatures on it. I'm going to go looking for some more. But right now, I think I'm at 12 total signatures.
That's still good.
On there.
That's a third of the Senate.
And so, obviously not going to be getting any don't expect any Democrat co-sponsors. But in any event, I think we're we're a good way on our way to a majority. And then, you know, some people just don't like to sign. They're like, hey, look, I've been burned before, and it's not, you know, nothing personal. They're going to vote for the bill. But and look, I've got that same line I use with folks. Like, you know, I need to read this because I've had some things blow up on me. Now, sometimes you just take a chance. Like, this is all it's doing. And you look at it, it's two pages, and you hope it's you hope you're not going to get burned on it. You know?
Yeah, let me jump in and ask you, too. I mean, the state health officer recently, this is Scott Harris, he recently came out, and the medical association made some changes. ADPH apparently made some changes. They're saying they've added layers of transparency in answer to the concerns of the legislature. Have they really done what they? Or is this like a quick gimme trying to keep you from passing a bill?
I think that's what it is. They, in fairness to them, they reached out to me and said, "Hey, this is we want you to look at this. We want you to look at this." And I, you know, they were going to do what they were going to do, and I didn't have time to deal with it at the time, but it's not. I don't think they would have changed it because they, you know, had worked through the governor's office and some, you know, with some other people to get the language that they came up with. I mean, it's better than nothing, but it's just it doesn't change, you know, ultimately what I'm after, and I think what most of the people are after once they find out is how's the state health officer appointed. I mean, it does deal with emergencies, but I'm probably going to bring a totally different bill on state health emergencies. I hadn't gotten that finalized yet, but it's going to basically be modeled after the Uniform Law Commission Act, Model Act, and what it will do is it'll have X number of days out there for an emergency. And then if you want to continue it beyond that, you have to call the legislature in special session to extend it. Now, we cannot, on separation of powers, we cannot make the governor call us in a special session. But I think what we can do is say, yeah, you don't have to call us in a special session, governor. We know we can't make you do that. But your authority to have this special, health emergency order expires in X number of days if you don't call us in and we don't ratify it.
Well, I think that's
what I'm looking at.
So let me ask you this, Sam. I mean, I look at it and think, okay, we've got because one of the articles I've got here, this one came from 1819 News. It appears that Governor Ivey is very lukewarm to your legislation at this point. And I have to wonder, why would that be? Why would any governor not want the ability to appoint a key position like this? Has the governor's office expressed anything to you like, don't even send us a bill, we won't sign it, or is it just because of the way it was worded on that one version?
Well, you know, we did make some changes the first time, and I thought we'd made some changes that were going to allow for, you know, easy passage, or not easy passage, but not running into a juggernaut. And then, you know, that got changed in committee, and it was very frustrating. I will be taking a different tack on that in terms of what committee I try to get it through and how we try to move it. But, you know, and I picked up some, you know, some at least one key supporter that was not a supporter when I was first trying this, you know, through some, you know, course of events. That particular senator has changed their mind about how we need to deal with this. So I think we've got a good shot of getting this through there. The governor, I mean, if it gets to her desk, I think she's going to have to sign it.
I think so too.
But
I think,
you know,
you're right.
she may, you know, dissuade some people from voting for it or encourage some people not to, you know, push it through. But it's something that she didn't really want to deal with. And we did have it set up where it wouldn't kick in until the next governor or the next health officer, whichever came first. In other words,
the next health officer, my God, he could stay there forever at the way things are set up right now. So
but whichever came first. So in other words, the latest it would be is when we have a new governor in 3 years, because Governor Ivey is term limited and can't run again. So it would be, 2020, I guess technically the beginning of 2027, January 2027. I took that out of this newest bill, and I'm not, maybe we'll put it back in there, maybe we won't. But I just, you know, I tried to be play nice up front last time, and it didn't work out so well. So I went back to my original.
Yeah, I think we're beyond playing nice with this one. I just feel like this is one of those. It's like, okay, look, we tried to play nice. Nobody wants to play. We all recognize the levels to which the state health officer has been able to operate in recent years. No one saw this. I remember when I was at API after I had left the Senate, we did some research on it, and the researcher came back and said, did you know that the state health officer is appointed by MASA, the medical association? And I went, that's not right. Go back and review that again. And he goes, no, it's right here. And he showed it to me, and I was shocked. And I thought, of all the things that we appoint and confirm, why would we let this happen the way it does? But, hey, listen, Senator Gavan, we only got a couple minutes left here. I do want to switch gears on you, though, real quick. Gambling, it's every single year. I mean, it doesn't matter what year it is. If the legislature's going into session, there's talk of a gambling bill of some kind, and it'll always be. Right now, we're looking at another casino gaming bill. You know, Representative Witt and Representative Blackshear are really working hard on it, apparently. But one of your peers, Senator Chris Elliott, he said that he felt like if we put this on the ballot in 2024, that it could hurt Republicans, especially in the brand new Congressional District 2, because it's a thing that Democrats flock to the polls for. With about a minute and a half to 2 minutes left, tell me your thoughts on that.
I think that's a legitimate concern. I don't, you know, I've been talking to some people, they don't think it's going to come out of the House. And what it is, it's been clear, made clear to me that I've been told, and I believe these people, how about that, that A, we are not going to have a special session on this, certainly not before the session begins. I also don't think we're going to have one within either of the 2 week windows in March that would be possible. So I don't think we're going to have a special session to kind of ram it down our throats. So that's good news. Secondly, I just don't think the votes are in the Senate. Spending some time with different senators this last week, I've said that before, and now after following up on some people, I just don't think the votes are in the Senate, especially when casinos were involved. Now, they had a clean lottery, or, you know, we talk about what a clean lottery means, but you know, I think that has got the votes from Republicans, but I don't think it's going to get the Democrats because they want to protect the dog track owners. So it does seem like it's not as something that you would be skeptical about as before. But, you know, that's just what the House is talking about. When it gets to the Senate, you know, what's that going to change when you've got the people that are kind of really seem to be doing what the dog track owners and what the Porch Creek Indians want them to do?
Yeah. Wow. It's always a nut roll. It's like I said, it's every single year. If the legislature is going into session, then a bill is going to be talked about at the very least. Listen, Senator Gavan, there's plenty more to come. I know you guys are going in, here just like what within the next 90 days. So we wish you well, and we'll check back with you. All right.
Thanks. Take care.
Merry Christmas.
Good week.
All right. That is State Senator Sam Gavan, one of the more conservative members of the Alabama legislature. And he hails from the Huntsville-Madison County area right here in this listening area. Let's take it to a break there, Butters. We'll do that right now. We'll take the break. We'll come back and catch up on a few text messages and move ourselves to the bottom of the hour and a brand new dipper, Soft Tyranny. Yeah. Stand by. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Wow, saving the world, one soundbite at a time. What were you saying right before we came back? You were saying something about questions on the medical officer, the state health officer.
Yeah, so I'm just listening. Like, so their funding all comes through the state?
Oh, yeah.
Are they subject to FOIA? If I want information,
That's a great question. I would assume they are, yes. But go ahead. What's your next question?
Well, I mean, because, obviously, that to the point of, like, I'm sure they're good folks doing great work. But, you know, if the structure's janky and they've got access to spend tax dollars, then they ought to be, you know, like open meetings acts and all that kind of.
And not just, by the way, not just spending tax dollars, but also issuing proclamations that impact life. They can shut you down. We saw this during the vast majority of the proclamations signed by the governor were proclamations that were issued by the state health officer, and she then adopted them. And that's all it was.
Yeah.
It was a sham. I mean, it was, and so you got a guy, and I don't know where else this is in state government. I was shocked by it. You've got a guy who was appointed by, but basically amounts to a lobbying group, the medical association. That's all they are. The medical association. And I'm like Sam Gavan, who called in a minute ago. I always worked well with the medical association. I never found them to be somebody or a group that was usually at odds with or something. And I spoke to them on more than one occasion. But dang.
Yeah. I mean,
what are a bunch of doctors doing just appointing the person who's in charge of us?
And that's the frustrating thing of this is it has really, the bones of it has nothing to do with it being medical. It has everything to do with, it's just the wrong structure of government, you know, fill in the blank of whatever it is. Like nobody should be upset. They should go, oh, we didn't realize because it hasn't been as big of a deal until COVID. Now all of a sudden it's, oh, hey, we need to fix that.
You can't be on the board of Jacksonville State University without being confirmed by the Senate. And you can be the state health officer? I mean, that's, and there's no accountability. So basically, when everybody got mad at the proclamations during COVID, tough. Who do you call? The legislature, who has no authority over him. The governor, who has no authority over him. He just continues to operate.
Well, this needs to be a conversation about basic civics. And like, hey, look, if they're... Where do they have a forum for public debate on setting these policies? And, you know, how are they having discussions? What data is he, you know, and what right do I have as a citizen to say, I want to know why you're making these decisions?
Oh, and he's been controversial. He's been controversial. If I'm not mistaken, he was controversial on some transgender issues earlier in the this past year. And you look at it and go, and we can't unelect you. You're just there until the group of doctors who pay to have lobbyists come to Montgomery and talk to legislators decides to change things out.
The unfortunate thing is it's so hard these days to have that intellectual conversation about what is really wrong. It really doesn't necessarily, yeah, okay, maybe he did make controversial, but it really doesn't have anything to do with him. It's just broken. It's just not a good system.
It's a broken way of doing things. It absolutely is. Yeah, yeah, good point. Gary from Decatur texted in. A bunch of other folks did too. 833-687-4448. It's 833-68-RIGHT. Gary from Decatur says, sounds like, my texter just decided to reboot. Why is that happening? That's wonderful. Right as I'm reading his text, I'm getting a refresh. He says, sounds like the WHO is trying to model their healthcare emergency rules and regulations after Alabama's. Healthcare wields an incredible amount of power on the people. Yeah, it does. John from Brownsboro asks the question. He says, does the medical community answer to the state or does the state answer to them? They certainly shouldn't be given carte blanche to regulate issues without oversight. Well, there you go. Now, the medical association does not wield power over the state, except that the medical association appoints the state health officer from among their own. And anyway, Jeff from Indiana, talking back about the Glock switches, he goes, National Firearms Act should be declared unconstitutional. They either need to do that or change the Constitution because it is plain language, shall not be infringed. All you have to do is look up the definition, and that's an infringement. And besides, everybody thinks the Second Amendment is about guns. It's about arms and anything that can be an arm. I agree. What time do we practice drills with your howitzer in the backyard? I like it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming up next. Number 2, Triple Dipper, Soft Tyranny. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.